Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
We're very fortunate. We're in first place. We haven't played like a first place team, you know, but that's where we are. And like I said before, the truth is we're very lucky that no one ran away with the division. And that gives us, that puts us in a good position. And obviously that position really matters at the trade deadline. To your point, it does matter as you think about making acquisitions, because you know, every team is going to be more aggressive with a chance to win the division versus a chance to just have a one-game playoff. So it does make a difference.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, and Zach Zaidman kind enough to sit in for David this morning. And we're delighted to welcome in Jim Deshaies. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Did you have a nice break?
I had a great break. Yeah, it was wonderful. I spent a lot of time up on the St. Lawrence River, dipping my toes in the water and just kicking back. And ready to go, though. I'm anxious. I'm excited for the second half.
Yeah, I think everybody is. And I think that a lot of the debate we've been talking about this morning has been about what do the Cubs do? How do they function in the second half? And how do they would they be willing to make a move? What kind of move do you make? And you know, Jim, I think that as we evaluate it and talk about different things they can do, a part of the issue is they're in first place. You know, you don't feel like you played your best baseball. Obviously, the 50 games in 52 days comes into play toward the end of the first half, and now, you know, do you need to do anything? Do you feel like you underperformed? Can this group get you where you want to go?
Yeah, and that's a $1 million question, and maybe millions of dollar question, depending on what the front office decides to do and trying to address any issues that are still existent between now and the trade deadline. So, you know, there's a little time to kind of watch it play out, see how they start after the break, because you're right, I think the 50 and 52 had an impact. You know, but that was the narrative that was pushed a lot last year, and I know in spring training this year they said, we don't want to talk about that, we don't want to make excuses, but the bottom line is that's what happened, and then you kind of limped into the All-Star break. So I think a lot depends on Cole Hamels' health. I think a lot depends on what you see out of Yu Darvish. Obviously, it depends on what's out there in the trade market and what you're able to acquire based on the assets you have, either at the big league level or in your minor league system. And, you know, I'm not plugged in enough to our minor league guys to know exactly how strong that is and what they could get in return. But it's certainly good enough to win the division. They have a first place lead after 90 games, so they're certainly good enough to win the division. We'll see what the other clubs do too, if they go out and make moves. So this could be a thing where the MVP of the team is the front offices, and what they do between now and the trade deadline. My biggest concern is with the rotation, and most people are focusing on the lineup and the lack of situational hitting and things of that nature. But with Hamels hurt, you know, they've got a road ERA close to 5, and they pitch really well at home. But for most of the year, Wrigley Field has played really pitcher friendly. So I think offensively they're going to be okay. My bigger concern is with the pitching staff.
Why do you think there's been such a disparity, JD, between the way they've played at home and the way they've played on the road?
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I mean, like I said, I know the pitching at home, Wrigley, for most first half was pretty pitcher-friendly, and they pitched really well there. But they scored there, too. That's the thing. They, despite the conditions, they were able to put up, I don't know, 5 runs per game.
Right.
So, and beyond that, I don't know. You know, the schedule can be fickle sometimes, and it's just a matter of when you're playing well and when you're not, or what the pitching matchups look like in a given series. You know, you could face a bottom of the division club, but if you run into their top 3 pitchers in a given series, it becomes difficult to win. So there might have been some of that going on. But that is a concern. But it's one of those things, like, it's just hard to put your finger on. We need to play better on the road. Okay, you know, we can identify that. But there's no real tangible fix for a situation like that. Just go play.
You know, I understand that there's a huge difference between opening the season and opening the second half. I mean, it's not like some great honor or some great accomplishment to be the opening of the second half starter. But why you Darvish? I mean, you could have had anybody. You had your pick of pitchers. What is it about Darvish, you think, that they wanted him to start the second half?
I have no idea. I mean, I could speculate on a couple of things. What, you know, when he last pitched, it could be they looked at the schedule going out over the first couple of weeks of the second half, and they wanted to line up certain guys against certain clubs. And so this made sense. You know, they, with all the lefties, well, Hamels isn't available, so they're not as lefty-heavy as they were, but a lot of times they'll start to look at that. They want left-handers against a certain club. They want right-handers against a certain club. So that might have played into a little bit. But beyond that, I really don't know. And maybe it's a way. You know, this one of the narratives around you is that they've been trying to prop him up. You know, and so maybe this is a way that they can do that a little bit too. Hey, we're handing you the ball. We want you to be the alpha dog coming out of the All-Star break. How much value is in that? I don't know, but it's, it doesn't hurt.
He also is 0 for 12 in his last, well, I guess he's had no decisions, but he has not won at Wrigley. I mean, it just seems...
That obviously has to change, and that's kind of what I'm talking about when I said my biggest concern is with the rotation. With Hamels out, with, the Chatwood, Alzolay, you know, however you're going to plug in that spot in the rotation with Darvish not pitching like a top of the rotation guy, those are real concerns. But you can't say, well, you know, Darvish hasn't pitched well at Wrigley, he hasn't won at Wrigley, therefore we're not going to pitch him at Wrigley, because that's just not going to work. He's got to figure it out.
What intrigues you about the National League Central after watching every team in the first half kind of get into this tight race here as we begin the second half of the season?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think most of us thought that it would be a very tough division this year. I think we thought it would be a better division in terms of teams at the top would be playing at a higher level, but the teams at the bottom would be decent. And what has happened is the top of the division, or at least what we perceive to be the top, and I think most thought it would be Cubs, Brewers, Cardinals, they have kind of slinked back to the middle, while the bottom two, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, have started to float a little bit, started to rise. I was kind of always bullish on the Reds. I didn't think they would pitch as well as they have. And they've hung in there pretty well, despite the fact that they really struggled offensively early. They're a dangerous club. They're really worth keeping an eye on with this Castillo kid at the top of the rotation and Sonny Gray being an all-star. He's pitching well. He's Scofani at times. He's been good. And their bullpen has a lot of weapons, so they're a very intriguing team. And what has happened, because the supposed top teams haven't played at a real high level, it's kept everybody in the mix. So now that puts pressure on the Reds and the Pirates front office to make a decision. Well, what are we going to do now? Are we going to go all in? Are we going to be buyers? Are we going to be sellers? Are we just going to kind of hold the line and hope for the best? And that's where a lot of this intrigue is. What are the general managers going to do now that they're in a position that they might not have thought that they were going to be in, on two fronts, the top teams being challenged by the whole division and the teams that thought they would probably be in sell mode all of a sudden being in a position to compete for a division title. It's wacky, man. It's I liken it to that Olympic bike race where they go real slow around the track for a while and then somebody takes off. In that case, that's a strategy. And with what's going on in the NL Central, it's just a bunch of teams kind of playing at the same level.
What the big takeaway from the All-Star game was Justin Verlander coming out and saying the ball's juiced and it's a blinking joke, and I guess he got called in and taken to the woodshed over that. They don't want that talked about. And Rob Manfred had said that, something's going on. We don't know what. It just seems like the most crucial equipment in the game, they should know what's going on with it. What's your take on this whole story? You see these home runs, you see they're on record to break the home run record by 500 dingers. It seems crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. The ball is definitely livelier You know, that they've come out now and the MLB has admitted that the science is in, that there's less drag on the ball. You know, seams are a little flatter, so the ball is carrying longer. I'm not convinced that it was done on purpose. I don't think I'm not sure I buy into the conspiracy theory part of it. Because part of Verlander's argument was that, you know, when the commissioner came in, he said he wanted more offense. And I don't know that that's what the commissioner said. I think the commissioner said he wanted a faster pace of play. And home runs doesn't really lead to a faster pace of play. It leads to, you know, guys jogging around the bases. It leads to pitchers pitching away from contact and walking more guys. It leads to, you know, an emphasis on velocity up in the strike zone, more strikeouts. So that's not a home runs doesn't really help pace of play in order to run scored. So I think he kind of swung and missed on that one. But I don't know that MLB didn't intentionally change the ball a little bit for whatever reason. They might have thought it was beneficial. I'm just not convinced they did. But I do strongly believe that there's something funky going on with the ball.
And if there's drag on it, how does that relate to throwing certain pitches? Are there some pitches that don't break the same way as the rotation of the ball? How would this affect things to point? Yeah.
I think it's mostly carry. Okay. I think so the ball carries better in the air once it's put in play. I think sometimes if the seams are flatter, it can be, you know, guys that rely on spinning the breaking pitch, that can be a little tougher. But most, I believe, have addressed that by using some kind of foreign substance. You know, it just seems like every pitcher's got a little something going on, you know, to make their fingers a little tackier so they can spin the ball a little bit better. And I guess I shouldn't say most. Many would be probably the better way to put it. So I don't think it's adversely affecting the ability to make pitches, but I think it's affecting the flight of the ball once it's in play.
Fair enough. Jim, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Look forward to the broadcast today.
All right. Great to be with you guys. Have a good day.
That's Jim DeShays doing great work television-wise with Len Casper. And listen, the broadcast on the radio is unbelievable. And today there's no Ron Coomer, but there is a guy filling in for him. And they won't be chanting Coom, but they will be saying Gingerhead Genius.
Yeah, you know, Coom's friends in Lockport text him during the middle of the game when I'm doing the play-by-play with Coom, and they don't call me Zach. They refer to me as GHG because
that's
of you.
That's it. See?
Coom doesn't get it, though.
All of this is okay to me.
I didn't invent that. That's your fault. You are both Ginger and Genius. You can't put it on me.
But so's JD, by the way. Brilliant man.
Yeah, he's very good. That was interesting. A lot of pitchers are got a little something to keep their fingers tight, and that's interesting.
Well, Jed Hoyer was with you guys yesterday,
yeah.
And he mentioned that, you know, when you're trying to gauge who you're trading for or who
yes.
to sign, you know, can you use the numbers as a true indicator
exactly.
with this baseball, quote, being the way that it is?
Yeah, Phil Rogers was saying the other day that Trace Thompson, the old White Sox farmhand, is traded. I forget who he's playing for, but he's hit 20-something homers in AAA. That guy never was a home run hitter when he was here, and something's going on. They have the lively ball down there as well. So I guess something to consider, maybe something to consider when you're looking at ERAs in AAA as well, when you start talking about how the pitchers are doing. Something to think about if the ball is jacked up. Do those numbers speak to you in the same way?
So you're saying Robert's numbers from the other
I'm
day.
I'm saying that was legit. That guy's going places. Bring in the pants. Or is it the Panther? I always get confused. La Panther.
He's fashionable.
Yeah, he's fashionable. Mullion Haw, he's Zach Zabin on the score.
Ginger-haired man as you are.
Bond in the game, misses. He gets the rebound!
Yeah.
He said something to Daddy.
Yeah.
That's not true, Daddy. He said, that's not true, Daddy.
Yeah.
That's a Nipsey.
I think we got a Nipsey.
He said, that's for his guy, Man, Nipsey Hussle.
We just watched history.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. David on vacation. Zach Zabin kind enough to sit in today, and now he's going to go be Ron Coomer after this, so pretty impressive that you
Coomer.
Waste
Coomer.
Your morning with me. I'm moved and have a great fondness and love for you. Russell Westbrook and James Harden are reunited in Houston. If you haven't heard the news, the NBA with another major trade. This time it's Russell Westbrook that is bolting from Oklahoma City, and he'll be reunited with his old teammate James Harden in Houston. We just played you the highlight there, which was when Russ got the 20 points, 20 rebounds, and 20 assists, the double, triple-double. And what's amazing about it is he's averaged a triple-double now for three straight years. And I would imagine for this team to be good, he's going to have to stop doing that, because it can't be about chasing a statistic. It's now about trying to win. And he goes into an interesting situation because he is part of the latest tandem, it kind of a potentially volatile backcourt tandem with himself and James Harden. They played together before. I saw one of the people tweeting out the story, had the two of them. They looked like they were fighting for the ball. They were both going for a ball that had bounced on the court, and the two of them grabbed at it, and it looked like they were fighting for it. So it was funny when you think about what's going to happen in the future here.
Well, they've played together.
They have played together for 3 years.
At a very successful rate.
They did.
In Oklahoma City, and Harden has become a significantly better player just because his role has changed a little bit since he went to Houston. I like this. I think it makes Houston a better team than when they had Chris Paul as their point guard. And I think the fact that both Harden and Westbrook get along, I think both will change their games somewhat to adjust to one another. It'll make Houston a better team. But this is unbelievable what's happened in the NBA. We talked about it earlier, mm-hmm. Mully, how you can make a case that in North American professional sports, since the advent of free agency, we've not seen an offseason like this in any of the sports. It's unbelievable, because you can't tell right now who is the favorite to win the NBA title. Who is it?
I still think it's the Clippers. I'm just saying Vegas had installed them as favorites over the Lakers, with I think Milwaukee was third. I don't know that Houston moves into the top three. But I do think that Houston is a better team now than they were with Chris Paul and James Harden. And it's very obvious that Chris Paul and Harden were having some issues. You know, you mentioned it during the break. Like, what happens to that TV commercial? Does that move to Oklahoma City now? First of all, is he staying in Oklahoma City? Is Chris Paul moving out of there? The problem with these trades is that there's so much money on these contracts. So Russ is like a $40 million player after this year, right? So he's got an extra year on that deal, but Chris Paul's still a 30-something million player. You don't want to, if you're Oklahoma City, you don't want to go over the luxury tax and have a bad team. So does he move on somewhere else? Are you trying to dump that contract? Who has the space to take it on it? And you know, you look at Houston, how are they going to fit together, not just from a playing standpoint, but from a financial standpoint?
I'm not worried about them financially. I'm more worried about how Harden and Westbrook fit in the D'Antoni system down in Houston, and is he able to make it work? I don't know. As for Chris Paul, I do think that there's going to be a team in the East that looks to get him, because the East is wide open too. The landscape there has changed after Cleveland and Toronto the last couple of years. You know, Philadelphia is geared up. I think the Sixers feel like they can be a factor. You mentioned Milwaukee. Obviously, the Bucks are very good.
Oh, yeah.
The Pacers made some changes this offseason to try and get in significantly better. And you know Pat Riley is always a man who's going to try and make a move in Miami to put together the best possible team out there. I look at it also from, you can learn a lot from the way Oklahoma City is building. You can learn a lot from the way Brooklyn built to create this offseason windfall that they've had. And to me, that is, make sure you are rock solid. When you have a team that the free agents don't want to go to, you better make sure that you are just creating the type of situation where you have a foundation put in place where when free agents look to make their move in the next couple of years, because you mentioned it's a two-year deal, right, for Leonard. I think he's got the player option for a third.
Right.
But what we've seen is for the next 2 years, this is what you're going to have in the NBA. So 2 years from now, are the Bulls going to be in a position where there's a steady foundation in place?
Yeah.
Where
that's the plan.
That's what needs to happen.
That's the plan.
That's what Brooklyn did, excuse me.
Yeah, we talked to John Paxson yesterday, and he was absolutely forthright about that being the plan. I asked him if they had done their legwork, and there was about Russell Westbrook, because you take Russ and you put him on that roster, you're going to the playoffs, but that's not the goal. They're trying to build something. They got a bunch of young players. A couple of things he said, which I thought were really interesting, is Coby White has the time to develop at point guard. I don't know if you saw the Ringer story. It said that he's the most exciting player among the lottery picks at the
Summer League.
And, you know, and that's him not shooting well. He hasn't been able to knock down his three. But you look at the team that they're putting together, and the idea is to be in a position where someone wants to come in and win a title with this group of players getting better all at once and all together. And certainly Lauri Markkanen shows the ability to maybe be the bust-out player.
Got to keep him on the court. That's been...
Well, you got to keep them all on the court, including Wendell Carter Jr., who is obviously down after having surgery.
I feel like he is the most intriguing player to me this year because we saw so little of Wendell Carter Jr., even at Duke when he was, you know, the third man on that team. You know, he was one of the most highly rated prospects coming out of high school, and he was kind of in the shadows a little bit at Duke and then didn't see much last year on the Bulls because he got injured. I'm very, very intrigued to see what he does this year, which is why I was so discouraged at the news that he had surgery.
Yeah, I was too. But John said he'll be back for camp, right?
Well, if John said it.
Oh, boy, you know what? That sounds like you're mocking me for making that statement. You're either mocking me or you're mocking the vice president of basketball operations.
And we are the flagship.
Either way,
it was probably a misstep.
You and I, soldier, will be going round and round.
Are you guys going to do the tango?
No.
You want to go?
No, I don't.
I'll go all day.
I know you will. That's why I don't want
to
go.
And I apologize to you guys for many things, but in particular, I'm sorry, Zach. I was not aware this morning that you're filling in for Ron.
Today. That's your job to be aware of.
So
fella.
Matt Spiegel is filling in for Zach on the pre and the post. Do I have that all straight now?
That's what Dustin said, although he said it a little differently, but something like that.
It's a documented fact.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevbo, and keep doing that Screamers and Howlers podcast. I think it's fantastic.
Season's coming up real soon. Yeah. We're about a month away here.
All right.
So
are you going to do a special emergency podcast over the women having a parade?
I think that's been covered ad nauseum at this point.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Thanks for letting me call in, Les, and I'll probably call again in the future.
Hope you will, Mickey. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blow our mind. 312-644-6767. Oh, we got Dustin Rhodes here. Who thinks I was accusing him of leaving garbage here yesterday. He made a big point out of it, out of the air yesterday. You'll notice that there is a liner here in the garbage can, and there's nothing on the floor here right now.
No. That's not what I accuse you of.
That's what they say you accused me of.
Well, you didn't hear it.
Oh, I was listening. I heard the whole bit.
I said you complained that I didn't put a liner back in the
can. No, I wasn't complaining about you. I was complaining about the maintenance people not putting in it. It had nothing to do with
it. Well, I took out the garbage. There was no liner in the can.
I wasn't complaining about you whatsoever. Yeah. Absolutely not at all. Let's be clear on that. I was not accusing you of anything, nor did you deserve to be accused of anything. Then some other people wondering if this was going to be a repeat of the thing that we had on Belmont Avenue when... actually, it was in the NBC Tower. It was over here where people thought we had the... what do we call it at that time? The microwave situation, and people thought that we had microwave gate and stuff like that, and I had nothing to do with it whatsoever. Anyway, did you like the All-Star game last night?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And Zach Zabin's kind enough to sit in. That's 3 days in a row we played that. And I got to tell you, I could listen to that all day. There's so many little moments there. But during the break,
we got Dustin Rhodes here.
During the break, Dustin came in to remind us that Mark Grody and Connor McKnight will be broadcasting from Smoke Daddy's Barbecue in Wrigleyville. And we'll talk to them in just a little bit. But Dustin, he told us, and he pointed south as he told us where they're going to be broadcasting. We're in the Prudential Building 2. And I said to him, well, actually, it would be north. If they're broadcasting near Wrigley, it's over here. And he said, no. And he pointed south again, and I'm like, you're pointing the wrong direction. And Zach jumped in and said, in the old days, you two would have just gone at each other. I had to play Dustin's mature, the new Dustin Rhodes, his mature response to Les.
That's what happens when you've been sick for almost 2 weeks. So
is that what it is? Mm-hmm. It's not just you growing as a man?
No, doubtful.
Grow the man?
We have some other good Les audio. I don't know if you guys want it here, if you want to save it for before transition, but that's just a little. There's a little bit more gold from the Grobber overnight.
Okay. Well, maybe we should save it.
We'll save that.
That way Grody can go into his Les. That's always a fun moment. But, Zach, you used to work on our show on and off for many. You still do, obviously. But. But we've been through a lot, you and
yes.
I, and we've had a lot of laughs about a lot of different things that have happened in relation to Dustin in particular, but really Les.
We need a game.
Oh,
thank
God.
Goodness, yeah,
thank
the Cubs
God,
are
the
back.
The second half is starting. Oh, God.
I'm pumped up. About it. Here's why: because I think the best part about the second half of this season is that the Cubs don't have one of these crazy stretches that they had to close out the first half of the year where they had the 50 games in 52 days where they went 22-28. I think the good part about this is with the 8 off days in the month of July, 3 in August, you're going to have a really good idea of what this team is. I think when they had regular breaks in their schedule at the beginning of the year, but they were 10 games above 500. They were looking like the team that you thought they were going to be. The offense was clicking in every aspect, top to bottom of the order. And they actually had really good starting pitching, leads late in games. And unfortunately, because they had a number of injuries to their bullpen early, because we know about Brandon Morrow not being around, but Pedro Strop was banged up with a hamstring in the early portion of the mm-hmm. season, right? So
Is Morrow never going to throw another pitch for the Cubs?
Who knows? You know,
you can't count on it, obviously, but have you heard anything at all? He supposedly was throwing not off the mound, but he was throwing in Arizona.
I think the fact that he is throwing in Arizona, I think the fact that they went out and made the long-term
yes.
investment in Kimbrel, it's not just a one-shot deal.
Right.
I mean, they made a long-term investment in him. The fact that that happened tells me that they're uncertain, so they decided to shore up that part of it. Now, I think he'll be better. You know, we were talking with JD about this earlier this hour. I think he'll be better. I don't think Milwaukee is as strong as the team that won the National League Central last year. St. Louis has had some issues. You know, who knows where Pittsburgh is, even though they've played the Cubs tight. But if you recall, at the tail end of last year, the first half, didn't Pittsburgh sweep Milwaukee? Right?
Yes.
And then the Cubs vaulted into first place at the All-Star break
yep.
last year. And then, I think you can overcome a rough first half. I don't think there's one specific way. We've been spoiled here because of 2016 that there's one specific way you have to go about winning a championship. And that's not the case. The key is, can you put yourself in a position where, A, you make the playoffs, and when you're in the playoffs, can you play your best baseball when you get there? And let's see what the Cubs do over the course of this second half, because I think there's a lot of talent on this team. We've gotten a chance now to watch all the other teams in the National League Central, and I think from top to bottom, the Cubs have the best roster. Now they just have to play that way.
You said earlier when we were talking that you wanted to talk a little Bears before we get out of here, and I'll tell you, I want to get to a couple of quick points with you on it, but let's start with this. Ask yourself one question. Do the Bears have the kind of level of commitment that, say, a Mike Vrabel has? in terms of what you're willing to do to win a Super Bowl. And I believe we have the audio of what Mike Vrabel would do if he could win a Super Bowl.
Matt Neely said he would cut off his
for a Super Bowl.
For a Uno Super Bowl. And I said, and I have no problem saying, no, I wouldn't do that.
Would you cut your off for a Super Bowl?
Oh, been married 20 years. Yeah, probably.
You've got three.
As a player. I guess we'll be married for 20 years one day.
So he wouldn't do it as a player, just...
Well, he's got three as a player.
Right, I know.
So he wants
been married 20 years. Yeah, probably.
That guy is a madman. I mean, he really... Vrabel was a crazy player. I remember being at a Super Bowl, and I was doing like the pool report, so I was at practice, and it was the Patriots. It was like a Friday, and they brought all their kids out. And he had his sons out there, and he had them, like, you know, lined up against each other, and he's throwing to them, and they're like hitting each other like Mike Vrabel would hit you, right? And he's kind of yelling encouragement to them as the two little kids are like tackling each other, and the one kid's trying to shove the other kid's head into the dirt. It was hysterical. It was like, way to go, coach. He's having a dad moment. It's like my parenting advice or something. He is a madman. Okay, so here's the question, and we'll just ask you the question. That's the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, mm-hmm. with featuring Mike Vrabel. The question is this, and I think this is there's a couple of quick questions we got to get to, and then we'll get to some transition. Number one, is Mitch Trubisky going to be good enough to lead the Bears to the promised land? How much will he improve from one year to the next? This is his third season. And, I mean, if you want to throw out the first one, but you can't contractually. So will you be giving him big money after this year? Will you be eyeballing his contract after this year? Do you believe that Mitchell Trubisky is going to take the kind of jump that he seemingly needs to take in order for the Bears to win a Super Bowl? And they are a team that is in contention for that.
I know that the ingredients are there for him to be able to do it, whether he does. That's the unknown, but right. You have a system from an offensive standpoint that is very friendly, very quarterback friendly. They've got a running game that accentuates the positives of this offense. They have guys they can throw the ball to. I mean, they've invested a lot at the receiver position to try and make that a little bit better. Tight end position, too. They got a coach who has worked with some really good quarterbacks during his time in the NFL. He's played the position, so he's able to think that way. I think that's a big deal. Now, can they continue to play the same kind of defense? I know the personnel is the same, but can they continue?
Well, that's where I was going. Let me just ask you this in a two-part. Number one, are they going to miss Vic? Number two, is Vic going to be a good NFL head coach?
Part one, how can you not miss Vic Fangio? Yep. And this is not a knock on Chuck Pagano.
No.
You talk to everyone
leader
around the league,
great
leader
guy.
Of men,
yep.
Great defensive mind. He's not Vic Fangio.
He hasn't play called on defense in a very long time.
And there's playing the game the way Fangio led this defense, which he essentially built, right? Took the tools, mm-hmm. and put it together. There's going to be an adjustment period. There just will be. They had incredible health defensively last year.
They had great health.
You know, and that's something, you know, yeah. you can't say, well, are they going to continue to stay healthy? But it's hard. It's hard to keep that health because health was a major issue in the years leading up to last season.
But you said it, too. The talent level is so good. You would imagine that Roquan is going to get significantly
correct.
Better, right? You would imagine, and I don't know why we don't remember this at all, but the idea that Khalil Mack came out of, you know, L.A. Fitness and dominated the NFL. Imagine him with an offseason. And he also says that he wants to be the greatest pass rusher of all time, and he's willing to work to do that. That is going to be a huge element of what you're going to see this year from the Bears defense.
Absolutely. Plus, I think he's coming back healthy. Remember, because once the ankle started bothering him, he was still a really good player, but wasn't as just game-changing as he was prior to that ankle injury, I think in Miami, right? So
does the kicker thing matter?
Yes.
It does.
Absolutely.
You don't think they're going to resolve that one way or another?
I think it's tough. I think it's tough to find.
I think they're going to improve because they can't get any worse. I really do. I think the kicker situation is going to be better. I understand the guys on the roster right now have no experience, but there will be guys cut. One of these guys could be fairly decent, and there'll be people cut. You'll be able to man that position because part of it, Zach, is you won't feel obligated to stick with Cody Parkey or to you're not going to pay anybody enough money that it's going to affect you in terms of not upgrading the kicker if it goes awry yet again.
Think about what the kicking position was like when you covered the team prior to Robbie Gould. It's not easy to kick along the lakefront.
Sure.
I think that's problem number one. It's the reason why you can't.
Jeff Jaeger was pretty good.
But between him and Gould, there was
a lot of bodies.
And that's what's happening right now. I mean, you'd like to think that eventually they put money in that position as well in terms right. of getting.
Well, they put too much money into it with Cody Parkey, and that's why they couldn't get out of it.
Well, part of the problem
and
is.
And then they had to get out of it.
You can't get veteran kickers to come in here unless you overpay them because right. they don't want to deal with the lakefront. That's yeah. problem number one. And then you have to go out and properly evaluate guys that can kick in the type of situation you're going to have to face when you're at Soldier Field. It's not easy, and historically, it's been a problem for the Bears.
Zach, I want to thank you for a great day. Really appreciate you getting up and coming in here. I know you have a very long day. Your day is just beginning. You will be heading out
gracias,
now.
Gracias, amigo.
Yes, muchas gracias, amigo. Unless I should stay with the more formal usted form. I hope that hope I haven't done anything wrong there. But you obviously have to get to the game.
Yes.
I am going to do some transition with Connor and with Mark Grody because I consider them friends of mine. You, on the other hand, are running out before transition, so I'll let them know that you don't love them.
There are a lot of people counting on me to be
I know
at Wrigley Field.
You have to yes. get out there. So thank you, Zach, for everything. We appreciate it, and we'll be back. When I say we, I mean actually me. I used the wrong pronoun.
Dustin and I are still here, too.
Okay, we will be here for Connor and Mark Grody, but Zach must flee.
Muchas gracias, amigos.
Yeah, Mully and Haw on the score.